You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Let's get on to our next guest, Dr. Edward Hanna, who explains more about the shocking melt on Greenland this year.
Oh my God, it's breaking up!
When billions of metric tons of Greenland ice melted into the sea in 2012, a team of scientists said it was more than global warming. A pattern of atmospheric pressure zones, called the North Atlantic Oscillation, or NAO, was boosting the big melt. Now that supermelt on Greenland has happened again, this summer of 2019. Hundreds of billions of metric tons of ice just poured off Greenland into the sea. Sea levels will rise measurably from what happened there just in July. Edward Hanna, Javier Fetvis, and team published the paper Important Role of Mid-Tropospheric Atmospheric Circulation in the Recent Surface Melt Increase over the Greenland Ice Sheet, and that was about 2012. Dr. Edward Hanna is a professor of climate science and meteorology at the University of Lincoln, UK. We last spoke on Radio EcoShock in January 2018 about a cold pattern in North American or European winters due to changes in the Arctic. Edward Hanna, welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you very much, Alex.
The size and the speed of that Greenland melt this summer just shocked me. I thought, this is a major climate event, and it's one the public cannot see. Did it surprise you?
Well, not at all, really, because, I mean, after the mammoth surface melt of 2012, which was arguably even greater from some measures, it seemed quite clear to me and other scientists, I think, as well, who are working on Greenland, that you don't need that much of an extra warming to actually recreate that event. So the ice sheet's already quite warm around the edges in summer. So just making it 1 or 2 degrees warmer and shifting warm air masses slightly further north over Greenland is going to have a big response with the melt.
So coexisting with the hottest July ever recorded by humans, we have this other strange invisible force. What is the North Atlantic Oscillation, please?
So the North Atlantic Oscillation, it's basically measuring the airflow across the North Atlantic Ocean. Now, because the Earth is rotating, there's a prevailing jet stream that generally flows from west to east, which is also driven by a difference in heat, where generally it's hotter further south than further north. So there's always an attempt by the atmosphere to redistribute heat from further south towards further north. So the jet stream is always doing that to some level, and the North Atlantic Oscillation is a way of measuring the jet stream activity in the North Atlantic region. Now imagine if you had two household barometers that measure air pressure, and one of them's in the Azores Islands in the middle of the Atlantic in the subtropics, so somewhere in the 30s latitude, and the other barometer is located on Iceland, much further north in the North Atlantic. So if you take a simple pressure gradient, so the difference that the air pressure between those two barometers across the North Atlantic, then in effect that's giving you a measure of the strength of the winds across the North Atlantic, because the air pressure difference is related to how strong the winds are. And that's basically what the North Atlantic Oscillation is. It's a difference in air pressure at the surface from a barometer further south in the North Atlantic, difference from a barometer further north in the North Atlantic.
How do we know there are two phases and what phase we are in?
So now what can happen is the jet stream, although it normally flows from west to east across the North Atlantic, it can sometimes reverse direction and actually flow in the opposite way, or sometimes neutralize. There's no net airflow going from west to east or the opposite across the North Atlantic. So the two phases of the North Atlantic Oscillation are simply measuring the direction of airflow and the strength of the winds and air pressure gradients across the North Atlantic. So under normal conditions, you have a positive NAO phase. So that's with westerly winds blowing from west to east across the North Atlantic. When a jet stream weakens and sometimes reverses direction, you can get a negative NAO phase, which is with easterly winds across the North Atlantic. So it's a matter of definition, but also there's a real physical change linked in with that.
Well, what you've said just explains something I've been wondering about, because various news organizations and a couple of scientists said that the great heat wave that went over France and Northern Europe this past summer, I think it was in July, slid over to Greenland, and I thought, well, how can the air be moving west against the jet stream? But sometimes it does reverse like that, and it could slide from Europe up over into Greenland.
Yes, and in fact, this was a rather unusual direction of air mass that affected the summer conditions over Greenland, because normally when you get a heat wave over Greenland in summer, it's air masses that are coming from the southwest or from the south, more from with a westerly direction up over the western flank of the ice sheet. But in this case, the weather charts show quite definitely that the air pressure situation developed southeast of Greenland and actually moved west from the east side of Greenland up over the ice sheet.
Now, trying to learn what the NAO is, the public is given the analogy of the El Niño-La Niña cycles in the Pacific Ocean, which we've come to learn because it affects our own weather, especially here in North America. Is that good enough, or can we do better?
I think we can probably do better. I think from one point of view, it's useful to make that comparison, but they are two quite different weather systems. So whereas the El Niño is very tightly coupled between the ocean and the atmosphere conditions over the tropical Pacific Ocean, albeit if it affects weather conditions further afield sometimes, the North Atlantic Oscillation can actually operate without any significant effect from the ocean. And computer models that have actually been simulating this have demonstrated this in some previous studies. However, that's not to say that there's not an effect of the ocean on the NAO or that the NAO can't affect the ocean. It's just that it's a less strong effect probably than with the El Niño. So the other point to note is that the North Atlantic Oscillation, it's involving middle latitude climates, which are inherently quite different from tropical climates, which is where the El Niño originates.
Has the NAO continued in its current phase since that big Greenland melt of 2012? I mean, how long does one cycle last?
Well, there's actually no preferred time scale of activity. There are weak peaks of activity, if you like, at something like 6 or 10 or 17 years, something on those time scales. And in fact, I'm just looking now at a graph of the NAO that I drew up for the last just over a century or so. And it does look that every few decades you get peaks and troughs. But again, it's a little bit chaotic and there's a lot of noise amongst the signal there. But what we saw in 2012 was an unusually deep negative phase of the NAO, so unusually low NAO or negative NAO, that was repeated to some level this summer. So the NAO has been quite negative for most of this summer. And when that happens, you get higher pressure developing over Greenland, as we saw very strong in 2012, but also this year. However, some of the intervening years between 2012 and this year, 2019, have actually had quite positive NAOs or relatively weak high pressure blockings over Greenland. So there is a lot of year-to-year variability in the NAO and high pressure over Greenland, as well as the longer decadal timescale variability. So it's a complex picture, but basically there have been some quite large year-to-year fluctuations in the NAO between 2012 and the present year.
So is there any way to assess how much of the recent huge ice loss on Greenland is due to the NAO state and how much to global warming or other things like the albedo change?
Yeah, so there have been a number of studies that have attempted to isolate the various what we call driving or forcing effects of melting or mass change on the ice sheet. So these include things like the general global warming trend, as well as year-to-year variability of the North Atlantic Oscillation or of high pressure blocking over Greenland. So there is a significant effect from natural variability. It might be very roughly half of the signal in any given year from natural variability, but there's also a very strong effect from the global warming signal as well in driving the recent general warming in Greenland and quite dramatic increase in loss of mass of the ice sheet that we've seen in the last 15 to 20 years or so.
So what happens when we go to the other pattern of pressure?
So this year it's been a quite a strong negative NAO, as was the situation in 2012, which, as I say, means high pressure blocking over Greenland, which tends to drag up warmer southerly airflow and melt the ice sheet. So the opposite NAO conditions would be a positive NAO phase, which would tend to be linked with weaker blocking over Greenland and less melt, all other things being equal. The point here, of course, is that things are not equal because of global warming. So superimposed on all this natural variability, we also have a general warming trend, which means that various accelerated melt kicks in over the ice sheet. So darkening of the ice sheet surface, for example, due to various feedbacks as you get more melts, it accelerates the melting with a darker water at the surface and more impurities at the surface. So there's other feedbacks as well, such as the effects of a warmer ocean around Greenland, which mean that even with these natural weather changes, if you like, from year to year, even if the natural cycle swings back the other way, because we've got a strong warming effect on Greenland from global warming, it's not enough to counter the increase in the melt that we've seen. It might slow it down a bit for a few years, but not really stop it.
I'm interested in how climate change can sometimes alter these big systems, and I wonder, could the NAO pressure system over the Atlantic get stuck in one position or dwindle to no effect due to climate change? What are your thoughts?
Well, I think due to climate change, we're seeing higher pressure over Greenland in summer, which is obviously that's the season when it's warmest, when you get the main melting of the ice sheet and the mass being lost from the ice sheet each year. There's good physical reasons to expect that high pressure will prevail in summer and become even stronger moving ahead. So one factor is that warmer air masses over the ice sheet expands. That gives you higher pressure on average. So this tends to block and divert the jet stream, push it further south more in summer over the North Atlantic and give you a more negative or a reduced NAO signal. But there's many effects on NAO and other effects from changes in sea temperature patterns in the North Atlantic, for example. But there's actually many effects on the jet stream and the NAO. So I don't think there's any reliable simulations at the regional level of how the climate will change over the North Atlantic. So it's not like the global climate model predictions where we know fairly reliably that there's going to be a strong and significant warming, albeit we can't precisely define the amount. But looking at the jet stream over the North Atlantic is such a complex picture that we can't really definitely say how it's going to play out during the rest of this century. But there are lots of effects, and so we're likely to see further changes.
Dr. James Hansen and a long list of co-authors published a mammoth paper, and in that discussion, the scientists suggest the North Atlantic could cool from Greenland meltwaters even as the rest of the world is warming. Do you see that happening, and what might that mean for weather in the Northern Hemisphere?
So the oceanography aspect of increased melt from Greenland is really quite interesting because we do see increased meltwater running off of parts of the southern margins of the ice sheet in particular, and particularly on the eastern side or southeastern side of the ice sheet. That can potentially be concentrated, focused in quite a small region and affect the stability of ocean waters in that part of the North Atlantic. In particular, potentially it could affect the so-called deep water part of the global ocean circulation. I think the studies I've seen so far, there's a lot of conflicting opinions and we simply don't know enough because we don't have enough span of observations. But there is a cooling or certainly not a temperature increase in part of the North Atlantic, just southeast of Greenland, in the last 10 or 20 years or so. And I certainly think that an increase in ice melt could be contributing to that regional cooling. However, at the global level, that's a relatively unimportant change, although if it bears out during the rest of this century, it could have some severe consequences on the making the winter climates of parts of northwest Europe, the UK, for example, more severe. We don't really have enough evidence here yet, I would say.
Right, and several popular press articles bring up the change of reflectivity of the sun's rays, or albedo, in the Greenland ice problem, and certainly falling smoke from record fires in the Arctic are darkening the glaciers, but is there also a change in albedo simply because the surface layer has melted away?
Well, there's certainly increased melting, and meltwater itself is darker, and the increased melting exposes more impurities near the surface of the ice, so not just smoke from forest fires, but other impurities and rocky debris and even biogenic debris within the ice, algae and so on. So overall, most of the data from satellites for the last couple of decades seem to suggest a decline in the albedo of the ice. So it's getting darker, the ice surface, and this tends to accelerate the melting and warming of much of the ice sheet. But it's not simply because of melting of the surface ice, but it's all these other factors and feedback effects, some of which I've mentioned.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. We are talking about the huge loss of ice on Greenland with Dr. Edward Hanna, Professor of Climate Science and Meteorology at the University of Lincoln in the UK. Edward, does most of the meltwater go into the ocean, or does some of it evaporate, raising humidity in the atmosphere?
Well, there will be a secondary effect for increased evaporation of near-surface water, but we've got to remember the Arctic atmosphere is pretty cold compared with further south. It can hold a limited amount of water vapor. I think the main effect by far is for increased meltwater to go into the ocean.
And how much has sea level gone up because of Greenland melt?
Well, in the last, I would say, 17, 18 years, there have been a series of satellites called GRACE, which have been quite accurately measuring long-term changes in the mass balance of the ice sheet. So it's something like 250 billion tonnes per year averaged over that period. So that's equivalent this century so far to something like 10 to 15 millimetres of sea level rise because of melting from the ice sheet. Of course, that's only part of the global sea level rise. There's lots of other factors that are increasing global sea level as well.
And do you have an informed guess about how much ice Greenland might lose by the end of the century and what sea level rise might come from that?
It's quite poorly known still at the moment. I think a conservative, so lower end estimate would be probably somewhere between 10 and 15 centimetres of extra sea level rise from just from Greenland by the rest of this century. However, in my opinion, and I think that there's a number of other scientists who agree it could be considerably larger than that, so easily double that. And remember that actually at the moment Greenland is the main contributor from the icy realm to sea level rise, but there's also probably nearly equal from Antarctic ice sheets and actually a greater contribution from warmer seawater expanding as it gets warmer, so thermal expansion of warmer seawater. So that's only still a relatively small part of the overall sea level story. So overall it could easily be somewhere around a metre, potentially even a bit more by the end of this century. Sorry, that's in terms of the overall sea level rise, not from purely from Greenland.
Yes, understood. So when we talk about Antarctica, a lot of the scientific looks are at warmer seawaters going under the glaciers and licking away at the base of them. Do you think that's happening in Greenland as well, warmer oceans moving into the Arctic?
Yes. So there are a number of what we call outlets or sea-terminating glaciers from Greenland. It's not as many as for Antarctica, but they are major outlets of the Greenland ice sheet, nevertheless. So, for example, Jakobshavn in the west of the ice sheet and Kangerlussuaq and Helheim in the east, and there are others as well. So there's certainly very likely to already have been an effect of warmer ocean water is in destabilizing those glacier termini in the last couple of decades or so. But what we're seeing from the warmer oceans propagating into the Arctic or warming of Arctic seawater is melting of the sea ice even more immediately. And, of course, that in turn can also feed back on melting extra ice over the Greenland region that is land-based.
How can loss of sea ice affect the melting of Greenland?
Well, because you're exposing Greenland, which is used to be surrounded by sea ice for a longer part of the year, at least in the northern regions, to potentially warmer air masses if the ocean is closer to the margins of the land or the ice sheets.
Right. There was a big open patch north of Greenland last year. That was unusual, and it's happened again this year.
Yes, so I've not looked directly at that, but just flying over back from a meeting in Alaska a few weeks ago, even much further north in the Beaufort Sea near to the North Pole, it was quite striking how much open water areas within the ice. But, of course, that from satellite data, we have a fairly complete picture of sea ice changes going back for a few decades now, and we've lost something like three quarters of the volume of the sea ice cover in the Arctic Ocean in late summer in the month of September since the late 1970s.
I worry, Edward, that some global warming denier, and there are a few left, they'll try and use a bit of your research against climate claims. They might say, well, you see, Greenland melting's just a natural cycle. It's the NAO. It will switch back to cold. It's not climate change. What do you say to that?
Well, climate is always changing. So from one point of view, they're right, but superimposed on the natural variability, such as the NAO, although I would argue that part of the NAO is not necessarily naturally driven, is this very strong warming trend through greenhouse gas increases from human activity. And that is really the dominant climate trend if we look at the last 50 years at the global scale. And it's certainly having an effect on Greenland temperatures in the last 20 years or so. So I've been involved in some work where we've looked at how the climate regionally in Greenland corresponds to wider global temperatures as well as to these natural cycles such as the NAO. And we see a much more direct association of the Greenland temperatures with the global temperatures in the later parts of the record. So I would certainly suggest that there's very strong evidence from the Arctic and Greenland, from climate science, that bears out the idea of a accelerated effect of human-driven climate change on the Arctic region, including Greenland.
You co-authored a paper saying that climate models completely failed to predict the sudden speed of ice loss on Greenland. So we don't really know what could happen there?
So I think the paper you're referring to, possibly, correct me if I'm wrong, please, was the had a paper out last year with Xavier Fetwy and Richard Hall in the Cryosphere, which I think you interviewed me incidentally last November on. And that was highlighting some of the latest generation of global climate models, their failure to predict accurately regional changes in air circulation over the Greenland region, so changes in high pressure that we've been talking about earlier in this current interview. So there is a mismatch between some of the best available recent climate models and what the observations have shown for the last decade. So watch this space, because we need to improve the climate models at the regional level.
And way back in 2006, when I began this program, Edward Scientist calmed us, saying Greenland would take thousands of years to melt. It would be gradual and it would be orderly. What is the thinking now among specialists who research as you do?
So it's certainly true that because it's such a vast mass of ice, that it would take at least a couple of thousand years to melt in its entirety. However, the quite big effects could be seen much earlier on within that overall melt cycle, of course. So that's already starting, in the sense that Greenland is very far from being in balance. We've already got something like a 250 to 300 billion tons per year of net ice mass loss into the oceans. That's directly affecting global sea level rise. And of course, as it warms further, then that is likely to accelerate in a way that is not, it's actually non-linear. So the more warming, the more it accelerates the ice melt. So as I said before in this interview, getting somewhere in the order of 15, 20, up to 30 centimetres of sea level rise contributed from the Greenland ice sheet within or by the end of this century is quite plausible, I think.
When the Arctic sea ice collapsed in 2007, I thought it was time to panic about climate change. And now, after the Arctic 2019 setting all sorts of ugly records, I feel that deep uneasiness again. Can we still keep calm and carry on, so to speak?
Well, I think actually it's a early, well, not perhaps so much an early warning sign, because there have been lots of warning signs, but it's certainly bearing out the some of the worst predictions, in a sense, from the climate models. Or in fact, some of the Arctic changes were not predicted by the climate models. It's a case where the observations are actually progressing more rapidly than the models were predicting, say, 20 years ago. So I share your deep uneasiness. It is also a sense of great fascination to be able to watch what's actually happening. But it would be nice perhaps to be able to do something a bit more about it. And perhaps some of this latest evidence from the Arctic will encourage us all to take stock of these changes and see what we can do about them.
From the University of Lincoln, we've been talking with Professor Edward Hanna. Find links to the science we've discussed and more news about the Greenland melt in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Edward, thank you for sharing your time again with us.
Thank you very much, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
If you have a story idea or thoughts on something you've heard, contact us, radio@ecoshock.org. That's radio@ecoshock.org.